a few hours only.
Sorry, I forgot to start the recording.
So because
This
people
voice only. Sorry, Alan, to keep interrupting. Carry on.
So because people only have to wear the devices, both devices, for a few hours only, the participants here in the Northeast have been happy to wear the eye tracking video glasses over their own specs. However, if that becomes uncomfortable, the technology, the eye tracking video glasses, can be retrofitted with corrective lenses. So whatever someone's prescription is can be embedded within the eye tracking video glasses themselves.
Okay.
Thanks. Any other questions for
Yes, my
Alan?
question
Hello,
is
Wade.
for Alan. Hello. Alan, enjoyed your talk there.
Thank you.
Does the device measure speed? Because my wife Dot had a fall about 3 months ago, and we think it was due to her suddenly speeding up. She was in a hurry and lost balance and fell. So, does it compare your average speed? Do you see a sudden spurt of speed?
Yeah, and then Karina can come in on this as well because she worked on the Mobilize D project for a while. In a nutshell, yes. So the device in the lower back will have a proxy measure for gait speed. So we can look at individual footfalls, which gives us a lot of information. So I'll cast your mind back to that table, the busy table with all the textual description and the numbers. Some of the characteristics in there allude to how quickly somebody is going at a moment in time. Now, the current state of the art is if you have those data only, you don't know the context and why your wife had to speed up, etc. So it's hard currently to be able to then really understand what was the challenge for that person at that moment in time, i.e. your wife at that moment in time. So yes, you can begin to derive speed, and but then the benefit of having the glasses and the contextual information is that the physiotherapist, occupational therapist, can have much more rich information to understand, well, what was it about that sudden shift in change in movement and speed and environmental conditions that caused your wife to have that stumble or near fall event. Sorry, and Karen, I don't know if you want to come in there just on the speed aspect.
Yeah, and also even the speed can be calculated from the sensor on the lower back. We saw in Mobilize D that when the walking bouts are too short, the accuracy of estimating the walking speed is not the best, so it's somehow compromised. And we know that maybe this type of sudden high speed walking bouts might not happen in longer walking bouts, maybe within your house, indoors, or the garden. Hopefully you have a big garden, but maybe you don't. So that's why we think these glasses will help, because you will see a spark on a gait feature, but you can also look back at the contextual information and even dive into it in terms of even spatial characterization from the glasses. So believe that the complement is key, but it might be that even the glasses can also, at a certain point, help to even tailor better the algorithms from the lower back. So at the moment, we are talking more about the application, but even technically, it could also help us to improve the algorithms. So
Yeah,
is
so
that.
there's many different kind of things here that I haven't alluded to this morning. So the primary goal for us is to be able to provide technology so that a physiotherapist, an occupational therapist, can improve mobility for those that are at risk of falling. So what does that mean? That means empowering the person who is at risk of falling to have strategies whereby they can go to the shop or just do things that they may not have done previously. That is our primary goal. Now, what Karen is alluding to are all these kind of subtle research questions that are interesting from a computing science engineering perspective. We will do them anyway, and they will kind of be the day-to-day kind of things that we will do to improve the technology, improve the analysis that has been done and is being done by other groups globally as well. So we will do that. And as Inkarna alluded to, how you define walking is still kind of up in the air from a physiotherapy engineering perspective. And so that has been hampered by the lack of context. And so having context for us, the engineers and computing scientists, will allow us to really address that. So when we are quantifying things like speed, David, or Dot, sorry, beg your pardon, we can do that better. So in effect, the addition of this extra technology allows us to answer and provide so many different questions. It's really multifaceted, but that really then opens the can of worms in terms of me boring you on a Saturday morning from all the kind of nuanced engineering, computing science stuff, which I'm happy to do. you, by the way, at a future event, if David will have me back and Karna as well. We can showcase the kind of nuanced things that we're really interested in doing. So hopefully that goes some way to kind of addressing your question, but also kind of give you some thinking on like all the kind of backgroundy kind of stuff that we have to do from an
Yeah.
engineering computing science perspective as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else have a question for Alan or Inkarna?
Yeah, just a quick one if I may. Morning all. So just thinking of your work, Alan, is around you're going to find out what has happened and complement that with context so that a third party like a physio or whoever can then work on strategies. What vision is there for this project to do automated interventions such as queuing, et cetera, so that it's not just gathering data for a contextual mapping for that person, but a real life wearable that people can, in their daily lives, in their daily context, have queuing, et cetera, to help them.
That's a great question. That is a really good question. I'm not quite sure where to start with it, other than to say I actually have another project that really begins to address that challenge in a different way. So specifically, I have a project that is the development of a mobile app to look at the use of mu mu music as a queuing mechanism, so people can listen to the music and their walking gets regulated based on the queue. So traditional research has looked at the use of a metronome beat to get people to step to something. That's shown to be really effective, not just in Parkinson's, but in stroke as well. The limitation with that is that it's really boring. People don't like to listen to beep, 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 etc. for a prolonged period of time. So what we've done is create a process where you can listen to the Bee Gees or David Gray or Sam Fender, whatever takes your fancy. But the music is slightly adjusted so that when you do go out for a walk, you listen to the slightly adjusted beat of the music to begin to intervene, to begin to retrain gait, to improve falls, etc., etc. So while it doesn't immediately fall within the remit of this project, other work alludes to what it is that you've just described. Ultimately, it's about these research projects are and can be conducted in isolation, but yeah, certainly the forward planning is how we then begin to have technology which can be deployed in the home for prolonged periods of time that regulate your gait from an intervening perspective, but also begin to look at using computing vision and AI to understand the context of where you're going. So at the moment, these kind of projects are in isolation, but we have to prove the science first, before we then begin to harmonize all these kind of different approaches. I would hope in the future sometime, as part of the work that I do and Inkarna does, that these paths and these streams of research will begin to intersect and merge, of where we have more completed and rounded systems to look at your walking, know the context, intervene, et cetera, et cetera. So, great question. Great question.
That taken ultimately things like intention to move that Julie Jones is having a look at.
What do you mean? I'm not immediately familiar with that.
So the intention to move where, as you get to fascination or you freeze, there are hidden signals that you're actually, I have an intention to move, but I can't move.
And
Sorry,
also
was that?
tracking the eye, I think, right? So for instance, if you track that these glasses also track the movement or where the eye is actually pointing. So it might help to understand potential mechanisms of freezing of gait. So if that's your question. So of course, that might come a bit later, right? But
Yeah, the intention to move is, I think I understand what you mean in terms of knowing what people are kind of going to do next. So like gait initiation, for example, or they're about to transition out of a chair. So again, work that we've done in the past is looking at gait initiation. So how that feeds into the much broader system, you're right, should be kind of brought in to look at making sure that there's no freezing when someone arises out of a chair, et cetera, due to that initiation of movement. So again, there are algorithms, there are techniques, but you're right, they do need to converge on a system ultimately of where you know exactly what the next movement is for that person. So if they are having difficulty engaging in that transition from sitting to standing and then progressing, that there is a mechanism. So some mechanisms have been around queuing in terms of muscle stimulation. There's auditory queuing, there's visual queuing, there's loads of different technologies out there. Some unfortunately have been white elephants. They haven't really kind of done what this had hoped to do. Unfortunately, that might be put down to someone trying, but not really kind of doing the science to understand how and where they should be deployed. Again, when we have technology, it doesn't mean it's going to solve everybody's problem, unfortunately. Some people may not just like the use of technology, and there might be something else that they want to use. So, yeah, I suppose my point is that these technologies have still a way to go. I'm not saying they're the kind of solution yet. These technologies have still a way to go to develop, to be harmonized, and to be deployed for holistic systems to be able to understand what people are about to do, so they might be able to help them do that task, so on and so forth. So it's kind of all part of ongoing research projects. Currently, they're a little bit in isolation, but yes, I think as time progresses, hopefully we'll see these systems merge and come together, etc.
Thank you. Hang on a second, Alison. Professor Sanas has a scientific interest in this stuff. Tanasis, do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Thanks, David. Alan, great talk and great to
Hiya.
see you. So two questions. The first one is about the cost of the ecosystem that you have, so both the wearable and the glasses. And the second question is very much related to one of the previous questions. Are the data transmitted real time through the phone, or basically trying to get the data a week later and then you're going to process it offline?
So the first question is about cost. So what do you mean, Thanasis? I'm sorry, by the way, nice to meet you. It's been a while since we chatted.
It's been probably a year or something. First question is about the wearable device that you have on the back and then on the glasses. So how much would that cost? Is it something reasonable that could be deployed? Basically, is it affordable? That's the first part of the question. And one was about the real-time aspect.
Yeah, so the implementation science side of things is something that we've considered within the work as well. I should say the team is very diverse and multidisciplinary, to use the kind of buzzwords. We have behavioral change scientists, we have nurses, we have neurologists, we have engineers, we have computing scientists, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, but we also have an implementation scientist. Because you're right, where does this technology ultimately go and who pays for it? Currently, the technology are the research tools, right? So the MacRoberts device used in Mobilize-D and used very use a lot within Parkinson's research and other research. They cost a couple of hundred quid. The eye tracking video glasses are in the thousands. So not really attainable for people at this moment in time. But if I just quickly allude to Meta Ray-Ban and those types of technologies that are much more commercial, in there's no reason to suggest that the type of technologies that are used as research tools now don't eventually kind of enter the kind of public domain and the commercial domain. So I think it's fair enough for me to say that maybe in 10, 15 years' time, what we perceive to be research tools now could actually be seen as fairly routine kind of technologies that could be harnessed by anybody. And so that technology could be there for anyone to buy. But to go back to where we are now in 2025, our hypothesis is, well, if you can use these technologies, and yes, they might be very expensive now, ultimately, I think there's an onward saving of costs in terms of helping that person to avoid falling, talking to the NHS 10-year plan of hospital at home, healthy neighborhoods, all that kind of stuff, going analog to digital, that if you can harness these technologies and have methodologies to showcase how they can reduce fall risk at an individual level, then obviously it ultimately saves the NHS some of that 2 billion in terms of hospital bedtime, so on and so forth. So that's a journey that we need to go on. We need to understand how these technologies will develop, should be developed, most importantly. They are research tools at the moment. We need to understand. And one of the things that we will do as part of this project, hopefully if it is funded, is understand how PTs and OTs can harness the technology, use the technology within their routine care, and that they won't be a stumbling block of where they're sitting down on a Friday morning, turning it off and back on again, plugging it in and out and thinking, why the heck isn't this working? So like those pragmatic issues, we need to address them and understand what is needed to make sure that the technology can seamlessly or near seamlessly integrate into what they would normally do. I should just briefly allude to the fact as well that as part of this project, we're running a two-arm RCT. We have usual care, a physiotherapist, occupational therapist will work with those at risk of falling to do what they normally do. But then the intervention arm is the digital care. So this is where PTs and OTs will do what they normally do, but with the addition of the data arising from these wearables to make sure that they can treat that person at an individual level. So that's kind of the particulars of the project. In terms of the data will be in a process of whereby the technology is given to the person, they return the technology, and then the data is downloaded and processed. It would be great to be at a point in time where everything is real time, but we have a bit to go yet. The technology isn't there because you can imagine wearable devices on the lower back, Thanasis, as you can imagine with the IMU data, that kind of is there to be streamed real time, but it's not really unless you're in a lab environment. And certainly, if you're capturing high quality video data in the home, being able to stream that via mobile phone is just not doable. Because people, we won't be restricting people to walk around their home. We will ask them to go home, but like do what you normally do. So if you are meeting your friend down at the coffee shop on a Thursday morning, whatever the case may be, please do that. You know, continue to do what you normally do. And so when people are ambulating beyond the home, currently the capture of those data need to be held locally, downloaded onto a memory card, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's where we currently are at. But kind of going back to the previous question and future planning and blue sky thinking of holistic systems and real time tracking, like I hope in 10 or 15, maybe even 20 years, we can get there of where we will have very slick, very cool technologies to be able to, you know, capture those data in real time, et cetera, et cetera.
Hello.
Hello, Valerie.
Yes, Valerie Wilson. One of the problems that I can foresee is ensuring that Parkinson's participants who get the devices can actually use them. I mean, I watched my husband for 10 years try to cope with NHS apps, and the problem is shaky fingers. I mean, now that's a common sign of Parkinson's. What measures are you taking to ensure that the devices can be used by the people that you intend them to be used by?
That's a really good question. A few moments ago, I alluded to the fact that another project that I have with cueing and music is looking at the kind of intervention to improve gait in near real time. And that was a question that we received in some of the feedback during the submission process. And just as a note, we're hopefully going to be able to fund that project to test it in the real world. Because you're right, the apps need to be. You know, there's something so small on a phone, and if you have tremor, etc., it's really hard to do that. In this particular example, there is no interaction with the technology per se, other than wearing the technology. The person who is given the technology, the person with Parkinson's, he or she will wear the glasses as they would normally wear glasses and wear a device around the waist. They don't have to interact with the technology in terms of pushing buttons, etc. However, you raise a really good point. Because people with Parkinson's have good and bad days like the rest of us, right? So they might see the physiotherapist or occupational therapist, and he or she will say to that person, you need to wear this technology for 6 hours. But as soon as they get home, they think, I am sick of wearing this technology. I'm just not in the mood. However, then the role of the care partner is really important. So I'm delighted to say that we have Professor Annette Hand as a co-applicant on this project, and she's a nurse by background, and she's really interested in the role of the care partner in how these technologies are used. And so one of the things that we will be looking at during the development of this work, if it is funded, is the role of the care partner and what he or she does to make sure that, you know, if somebody is having a bad day, that they do continue to wear the technology for as long as possible to kind of say to them, look, it might be beneficial for you just to continue wearing it for another hour, 2 hours, maybe not the 6 hours, but I think, you know, the physiotherapist would really benefit from that if you wore the technology, because you'd actually provide them with data to help you avoid falling. So you raise a really good point, and something that I didn't really describe, Valerie, is that we hope to work and really understand the role of the care partner in terms of how these technologies are used. I think that it's a really critical thing. And when I was chatting with Annette, when we began thinking about the development of this work, it's something that Annette is really passionate about. And I certainly saw the importance of being able to understand the role of the care partner, because for my other project, which hopefully will be funded, the role of the care partner there is really important, because he or she might be able to help do something on the app, for example, or he or she can give in advice and information on how those apps are developed. But for this particular project, there's no interaction pushing of buttons, other than hopefully the care partner will be there to kind of say, don't take the technology off, because it'll ultimately do you a benefit in the long run.
Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. Really good question. Thank you.
Does anyone else have a question for Alan?
You
Hi,
may not.
sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just trying to unmute. So my husband has Parkinson's, reduced gait, and a slight stoop.
but he also has a damaged vertebrae. So no one sort of takes ownership of what's causing which pain. And if you're doing research, would the fact that he's got another ailment exclude him from doing research?
No, not necessarily. We haven't decided the particulars of the protocol yet in terms of who would be eligible to participate. But can I say just broadly that the use of the technology, if it has been fed back to a physiotherapist for him or her to be able to understand someone's poor gait and poor mobility in the home, having that extra layer of information in terms of what impact the back injury has on that in terms of safe gait and safe navigation, obviously just kind of feeds into the bigger picture in terms of being able to develop personalized strategies to improve gait and safe gait within the home as well. So I'm delighted to say that we have a Parkinson's pain researcher as a co-applicant on the project as well, Jenny Naseby. The benefit of having Jenny on board is that she's a physiotherapist and she's involved in pain research, but actually she is funded by the Medical Research Council, specifically looking at pain within Parkinson's. So again, that would be a really nice kind of inclusion of different knowledge and information in terms of how and where these technologies are used. It's not just about gait and Parkinson specifically, but then it's potentially about the kind of the bigger picture for that person so that the physiotherapist can get the full picture on what is needed to reduce fall risk in the home.
And if you already used another technology, would that need to be stopped during your research?
It depends on what that technology is. So again, that can be dealt with at, if we get to the stage two. It just depends on what the technology is, and we don't need to go into the peculiars of that, the particulars of that this morning. It just depends, and I know that's a bit of a wishy-washy reply, but if there is any kind of nuanced specialist equipment and that has an impact on the person's safety, then obviously that needs to be discussed between the person and the physiotherapist and research team, and that really is probably a private conversation to be had between the person and the research team. But generally, what we hoped is that people can be generally people can be included where and if ever possible, as long as it is safe to do so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Does anyone else have a question for Alan before we wrap up?
David, I'd like to ask a question.
Go ahead, Stephen.
One of the things that happened a few years ago when the big technology companies started introducing video specs was a whole ethics debate around about the capture of images, filming people that didn't even know they were being filmed. And so I'd be interested to understand how, if at all, you've managed to overcome that particular ethical issue by the use of AI.
Yeah, so it's always the elephant in the room, isn't it, Stephen? Capturing video data in the home and beyond. So we have been and were awarded NHS ethics approval via IRAS submission and all that kind of stuff, as well as university ethics. So the way that we approached it was that no human is looking at the video, and it is the AI that interprets the video data only. People who volunteer for the projects have a card that they are given as well. So if anyone is if anyone assumes that they're being video recorded, then they can have a card to explain to the person who might be wondering what's going on in terms of the funny look at glasses that somebody might wear, that they have a card to be able to showcase them that this is for a research project. No human is actually going to look at the video. And so because no human is looking at the video, we rationalize that people's privacy is upheld because it is a computer that analyzes the video and gives a textual description of the scene and the context of where somebody's walking. Does that answer your question, or is there something that I'm not addressing there?
I think the question is more related to, let's say I've got the specs on, I'm walking down the road, need to go to a public toilet. How do I explain to the man standing next to me that actually it's just a computer that's looking at your willy?
And there it is. That's the elephant in the room. So the whole idea is that the AI looks at the video only and no human is actually looking at it. So your privacy and all the kind of things associated with one's privacy are upheld. For situations going to the bathroom, the AI will recognize the type of environment that the person is walking into, and it will delete those video scenes. So the AI models that we have are taken from the field of robotics. The identification of toilets and all the kind of things that would be in bathrooms are fairly routine and pretty robust in terms of being able to bring that together to recognize the period of time when somebody walks into the bathroom versus the time when somebody walks out. the AI will still analyze that environment to say the person entered the bathroom, the person left the bathroom, and if they had any abnormal gait within that bathroom. Obviously, he or she might be standing at a moment in time. We can recognize when people are standing, but it doesn't have the video to then, showcase all the kind of things that happen within a bathroom environment. But there would be a record, a textual description of saying entering bathroom, leaving bathroom, or was walking in bathroom. Had a little bit of difficulty when they were walking in the bathroom here, by the way. Their gait is a little abnormal. There was no obstacle on the floor. So you might want to have a chat with the person who's at risk of falling. That from the AI, it tells us that your gait was abnormal when you went to the bathroom at that moment in time. Tell me a little bit more about the challenge that you had. And so you will still have a textual description of where the person was. And if they were in the bathroom, it won't tell you exactly what they're doing in the bathroom, ones and twos. But if someone is going into the bathroom, then it's pretty obvious that they're doing something to relieve themselves.
I guess my question is more to the non-participant. As a participant in your study, you know the answer is, oh, it's only AI, it won't record anything, blah blah blah. However, to the people round about you, so for example on a beach or on a toilet or wherever, to say, it's all right, it's only AI examining you.
And that can be
And I
addressed.
have to say, there's probably not a correct answer to this. This is something that we
Good
have to work
luck
with.
with that explanation for the person standing next to you, Stephen. Rather unique.
So what I would say to that, Stephen, is that the technology is prescribed at moments in time. So if someone is going on holidays to the beach, we wouldn't want expensive technology to be down at the beach because it could get broken, right? So if someone's going to the beach, you don't wear the technology. So we can begin to kind of, yes, to deploy the technology when people are doing their routine activities at home. But if there is any uncomfortable scenario that might arise, we can hopefully then begin to navigate those by
I
saying,
think
look, just don't wear the technology.
the answer is probably going to be use your common sense.
And use your common sense, exactly. So if you're going into the changing rooms of the local swimming pool, don't wear the technology there for obvious reasons. So you're right, you're absolutely right. There is a bit of common sense that needs to be utilized. And again, that probably is dealt with at an individual level as well to understand people's routine kind of habits. And it's that type of feedback which is really beneficial from these interactions. So thank you for that.
A final question for Alan or Inkana before we wrap up. Nope.
I have a last comment if that's of any value.
Go
Yes,
ahead.
please. Yeah.
I mean, I would like to mention that also when with the question related to cost expenses of the project, I'd like to mention the fact that if we have a wearable technology that can allow better care, overall better care, in a way is going to reduce hospitalization or as well visits to the NHS sites. And in a way, that will also reduce the footprint, right? The carbon footprint. So that's something at least in here is what we are recently talking a lot, that this wearable technology, this medical technology can also reduce somehow visits to medical sites. And if in a way you are going to reduce those visits, you are also reducing the carbon footprint. So something also to keep in mind that perhaps a wearable technology is not always the ideal, but if it can also has a big value for clinical perspective, and of course in this case logistics, it could also have a like a trade, how you say, trade-off in between these.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's so many other shoots of research that can begin to be addressed and discussed with regards to this type of project, as alluded to by Inkarna. Just the improvement of efficiency of how and where people are assessed, monitored, whatever the word is that you want to use, and obviously that has implications for the environment, etc., as well. So I think it's an exciting project. It generates a lot of topics for discussion. And on that note, just my thanks to you, David, for inviting myself and Inkarna along this morning to give you a snippet of what it is that we're proposing. Hopefully, we'll be in a position in a couple of weeks and months to be able to come back if invited to be able to give you an update on the work. Really, just thanks to everybody who's asked questions this morning. All really good thought-provoking questions. It's good to see that some of your thoughts actually overlap with a lot of some of the other comments that we've received as well across the depth and breadth of people affiliated with this project, not just from a PPIE perspective. So yeah, thank you to David for inviting us along. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. And I'd like to thank you, Alan, and you and Karna as well, on behalf of the Edinburgh Parkinson's Research Interest Group for coming, taking some time to speak to us today. I'm wondering if if the two of you and Stephen would like to hang on for a few minutes at the end. Stephen, is there would you like to do that, or have you heard enough?
No, that's fine. I'll hang on.
Okay, well, in that case then, I'm going to turn the recording off now, and I'd like to thank everyone for coming along today, and hope to see people again soon at an upcoming research interest group event. So goodbye to everyone.
Good weekend.
Thanks.